So this is the first official edition, hopefully, of Robot Radio. My name is Greg Stanwood. You know me as Wolf Marauder on the comment section. I'm here with Andrew Martin, Rocky's Magic Number, on the comment section. How are you today?
I'm doing all right, Greg. How are you?
Pretty good. You just got employed. I just got an internship. Everything is good.
Hunky dory.
Yep. So
now we can just turn all our attention to following the Rockies.
If only all of our attention could be. anyway, so hopefully, you know, assuming everything works out okay, assuming there's no technical issues, we will be able to keep doing this on a weekly basis, and hopefully this will be the start of bringing Purple Row into a new domain, the audio domain, so to speak.
Yes, we're just finding new ways to infiltrate every moment of your lives. If you didn't waste enough of your time, you know, typing and reading and getting in online arguments, now you can listen to us and disagree with us that way. Well, make sure you think about Futurama, where they beam the ads into your dreams, and now you're going to be, you know, getting in arguments over walks equaling hits in your dreams, and boy, that would be a rough night's sleep.
I think Russ is working on inventing that as we speak. So we might as well get right into it. The big news so far today is that it seems that Orlando Cabrera will be headed to Cincinnati, or at least so they say. Although the decision hasn't been made yet. Judging from the fan reaction, for the most part, to the Rockies' interest in Orlando Cabrera, I have to say that this is pretty good news. Is that right?
Pretty much, yeah. See, I'm not really a Cabrera fan, at least not in the last couple of years here. He's still okay defensively there, but, you know, the question's been raised about whether he can play multiple positions. But just going off what Clint Barmer just told us, you know, any capable, you know, any sound shortstop is going to be able to hold down just about any infield position. But if you take a look at, you know, Cabrera's numbers, just the last couple of seasons here, definitely a decline, and he's never really been that good. I mean, as little as 2 years ago with the Angels, or back in 2007, I should say, he was about a league average bat, but he's been pretty steadily below average in the last couple of years here, and really, it's not as if he walks a pile or hits for some sort of magical power. He's really not better than Barmas, in my opinion.
I was a little bit skeptical at the time whether or not Cabrera would even be able to make the transition just simply because of his age. But it seems like that pretty much was determined not to be the primary issue. It's just that Cabrera was not going to provide any sort of improvement over Barmas or any other bench player, really.
Well, that's really about it. I mean, the question mark would then raise, well, could he do better than Eric Young? And that's really the question being asked. And I don't know if that really is. I mean, can he do better than Melvin Mora? Can he do better than Felipe Lopez or Clint Barmas? You know, can he do better than any of those three or four there? And if he can, or at least come close, then yeah, I mean, consider him. But I think he's going to be subpar the whole way through.
Yeah, that's where I land as well when it all comes down to it. I am thrilled, to say the least, that it looks like it's going that way. But just watch. As soon as we stop recording, it's going to be Orlando Cabrera to the Rockies, and then we're all screwed. So the other news, I guess, that kind of recently came out of nowhere for me, at least, was the interest in Kevin Gregg. The bullpen has seemed kind of solidified recently. It's kind of been, other than the Derek Turnbow stuff, there hasn't really been a lot of attention put because we have, you know, seven players that are kind of already ready to slide straight into it. Does Kevin Gregg have a spot anywhere in the pen? Because it sure doesn't seem like it to me.
No, what this kind of says to me is that they're not terribly confident about Manny Corpus resurfacing as being an effective late-inning reliever. Not closer, obviously, not even setup man, but can he be a seventh-inning bridge? Can he really come down and, you know, get the guys out? And part of me thinks that they just don't have faith in his recovery, or that it might take longer than necessary. And on a similar note, Taylor Buchholz, he won't be anything, but I mean, basically he'll be a mid-season acquisition based on his timetable for return. And similar, even if Casey Weathers decides he wants to suddenly start, you know, murdering the minor leagues, they're not going to pull him up in April. They're going to probably make sure that he's up and ready to go, with his new elbow and all.
Right. I guess just for me, the question is, I mean, I also share a similar skepticism about Corpus, just in the sense that he hasn't shown us for a couple of years now a whole lot. And of course, you can chalk it up to injury. But I guess the big question from my end would be, say we hypothetically sign Gregg, what do we do? Do we option down Daly? Do we option down Corpus? I mean, where does he fit into that picture?
It'll all depend on spring training in my mind. I mean, granted, if we're committing major league money to Kevin Gregg, he'll get the nod over Daly.
Right. Or maybe Daly's, I would agree.
I mean, not that I want. I think Daly needs to have a spot in the major league bullpen, but what with the, you know, flexibility and because of his option years and the fungibility of relievers and all that jazz.
This becomes more convenient for him, exactly. I mean, he's basically the easiest one to option away. And plus, I mean, honestly, when Buchholz returns, if we have a healthy bullpen in the rest of our players, it might even be Daly who has to make the sacrifice anyway.
Well, if you remember the beginning of this offseason, though, I think it was Troy Rank pointing out that he thought that Corpus would be dealt this offseason as well. Maybe this Kevin Gregg interest is kind of a precursor.
Could be. I mean, Corpus's contract isn't too outrageous. I mean, if he were to return to form, he would certainly be worth that money. So if some team has hope that he could regain that form, then I suppose that's certainly an option.
No, I completely agree with that. But a lot of it, it just comes down to, has Corpus for the last 2 years been real Manny Corpus? Or has he been, oh, he's injured, or oh, he's just coming off a playoff high and still, you know, whatever it is. I mean, did hitters just figure him out, or was he just not that good to begin with and it was just kind of rookie luck? It's a big question to ask there. And you add in, you know, elbow. What was it, bone spurs in his elbow that
yep,
he had?
Bone chips.
If you add bone chips into there, add any kind of injury into there, I mean, you're just kind of seeing the, you know, the numbers start to slowly tick down on what we can expect out of him or what we should hope for.
Yeah, I would say that at the very least, if he doesn't come through this year, he's going to be traded or something. Because even though I think our organization has, I mean, it's starting to improve, but I think for the past couple of years, it seemed to me that the bullpen depth, we've just had so many instances where our starting pitching depth has been huge and fantastic, and there have been plenty of options. It seems the bullpen has been a little bit neglected in that area, being that we had to call up somebody like Matt Daly instead of having somebody else, like a true larger-than-life prospect, ready to call up. But now we're starting to fill that up a little bit, and I think that some people are starting to be knocking on the door, whereas Corpus just really won't fit into the picture anymore if he can't get it together again.
Well, at the same time, too, if he does kind of fall apart there, you got to realize that we're not talking about a closer. We're not talking about a setup man. We're not talking about any kind of real specialist. We're talking about a guy who can come out and give you an inning, and that's about it. Not a special inning, not an important inning, just an inning. And, I mean, look what we got out of Matt Hergis. I mean, we had a good season in him in 2007, and while his 08 looked worse in terms of his ERA, all his components were still there, and he was still, I mean, effective as far as his own actions go. But I'm just using him as an example. I mean, year before it was Tom Martin, who, again, wasn't anything special, but he's able to get the job done well enough. And just, I mean, there's going to be a bunch of other scrappy people out there that we're not thinking about who might be, you know, heck, maybe even Tim Redding. Who knows? I'm just saying that Dan O'Dowd seems to find a way to spin up some sort of a pitcher to come in and pitch low-leverage innings for us, you know, and get them for free, you know?
Yep. So moving on from that, I just want to talk a little bit about the whole minor league contract issue that's been going on. The Rockies over the past week have signed 4 to 5 kind of so-called washed-up veteran-type players, and people like Loduca, Redding, I suppose you could include Justin Spire in that. And
Paul Loduca, Tim Redding, those guys can't possibly be better than our starters, can they? What are they doing? Why are we wasting money on those guys? Ah,
exactly. And you read the comments on MLB trade rumors, and all the people who don't follow the team too closely are like, oh, he'll be a great backup, but they have Olivo, you know, on that sort of thing. Yeah. But I mean, I can't tell if it's just that there's just not a lot of awareness that these players are basically no risk. In the sense that on a major league budget, they are minuscule in terms of the amount of space they take up. And, you know, worst case, we're not obligated to put them on the 40-man roster or the 25-man roster or any roster other than the AAA roster, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how we got Juan Rincon back. We're forgetting that we have Rincon as well. And I'm not trying to say, woo, Juan Rincon, because as we were made so aware by any number of ranting fan posts, Juan Rincon isn't very good at the game of baseball, but we got him back for essentially free. I'm still kind of baffled as to why we gave Flores such a a major league contract of any kind, but it wasn't like we were breaking the bank on him either. But the point is that these minor league contracts are really just, hey, you don't have a job, you want a shot at it, you want to at least play AAA ball for a while, and maybe you'll get a call up in September, or, you know, best case scenario for you, someone gets hurt and we need you, hey, come play for us, come take this $28,000 to $40,000 contract, just come keep playing the game you love.
Going off on that Flores tangent real quick, Flores was arbitration eligible, so I had always kind of assumed that the reason they signed him so quickly for such little money was simply that it would be a waste of time to even try and indulge him in trying to get a better deal. Like, it seemed to me that, and it was honestly the same with Belial, it seemed to me that they were like, oh, you'll accept a contract for less than $1 million? Fine, we'll just sign it right now. I mean, we'll get it out of the way. Why not?
I can't imagine it's going to hurt too much in terms of trying to pick up a character like Lopez or Hudson. I mean, if we say, oh no, we spent that $600 on Randy Flores, if we're really not going to meet ends with Hudson, I doubt it's going to be for, you know, $500,000, $600,000. It'll probably be $1 million or $2 million that we're differing on, and that'll make the difference with those kind of guys there. So, I mean, I guess the point that I'm making more with Flores isn't so much, you know, his arbitration schedule or he's just not very good. And yes, he did show a propensity to be able to retire left-handers, but why guarantee him a contract?
He was going to be guaranteed one anyway, I guess is what I was saying, unless we released him and then re-signed him. Are you saying that he should have been like Quintanilla and just should have been outrighted and then...
That's essentially what I'm saying. I mean, maybe not non-tender, but yeah, outriding him and seeing if he'll come back on a minor league contract.
Right.
But I guess they're just kind of not saying – I mean, I don't know. I mean, it depends on kind of what their plans are for Franklin Morales, because if Flores' job is going to be come in, retire left-hander, go sit down, then I guess that works and they're trying to, you know, use Morales more for full innings.
That's the way it seemed to me. And, of course, I mean – say we were to sign somebody like Joe Bimel, I'd obviously say, all right, we don't need Flores anymore. Go ahead and bite the bullet. But at this point, I don't have too much aversion to Flores in the pen unless he starts being mismanaged the same way Jeremy Affeldt was mismanaged.
Mm. Now, I'm looking at Flores' career lines here. Just pulled them up. Or no, not Flores, it's Morales'. And Morales... over his career, and granted, in significantly fewer plate appearances, but granted, there's significantly fewer left-handers in baseball. To right-handers, he's allowed a 777 OPS. That's not very good, especially the 372 on-base percentage. That's just pretty poor. I mean, it's not. The point is, left-handers, 531 OPS, 256 on-base percentage. That's significantly better. His strikeout-to-walk ratios are better against. I mean, like, a whole... It's 286 against lefties, 119 against righties. That's just pathetic against righties. And if you just looked at his right-hand line, which obviously isn't fair, but his right-hand line, that doesn't play Major League Baseball. That's a pretty poor reliever. But his left-hand line is downright elite. So I guess they're trying to hope that he'll suddenly put it together and figure out how to pitch to right-handers. But if not, I mean, we probably don't really need to look too far forward at a lefty guy, considering we have Morales. But this kind of goes into why I, you know, think we should probably try to look elsewhere for talent and see what we can get for him.
Yeah, sign some more minor league deals. So let's move on to Orlando Hudson and Felipe Lopez real quick. These are both players that have attracted a lot of interest from readers of the blog. And, you know, Hudson's out here saying that he wants $9 million for a contract and Washington's offering him $3 million. You know, I can't, and of course we can't afford $9 million. I can't see him getting that money. He's going to drop his offer, but the question is, how much is he going to drop the offer? And then Felipe Lopez, there's really been no news about him at all. I've been kind of surprised. I mean, now people are saying that St. Louis might be interested. They need a second baseman. So I guess my question is, on Hudson and Lopez, I know you're a big fan of Lopez. Where do you stand on signing either of these players? When does Hudson become affordable, and is Lopez worth it for taking over second base and moving Barmas into super utility?
Well, either of these guys you sign, they're going to be starting at second base. We pretty much know that for a fact, because while I do think Lopez has the versatility to be a utility guy, after the season he just had, he's not going to settle for a utility contract. I'll tell you that for a fact.
Absolutely.
Hudson's...
I wouldn't put him there either. I would absolutely start him.
Yeah, I'm just throwing that out so anyone who might be confused on my stance on it, it's saying either of these guys sign, Barmas becomes a utility guy. And realistically, I'd rather Barmas be the utility guy. I'd like him a lot, and I'd rather have his glove out there for nine innings, but I'd rather not have his bat out there for nine innings. That's the big difference right there. I'd rather have him in to make sure that we have a lockdown defense on. And the thing is, I don't really think Felipe Lopez is that poor playing, you know, playing defense. And it's not like there's going to be a massive drop-off with him at second base from Barmas, especially when you consider what his bat adds back into the equation. The big question will be, though, you know, which Felipe Lopez will show up. And similarly, which Orlando Hudson will show up. Because, well, he hasn't been too awful year to year. You look at Orlando Hudson's career line, it's not terribly impressive. He had that monstrous start with L.A. I mean, well, plus 900 OPS, just destroying a baseball. But he ended up the season with a 774 OPS. Granted, which is, you know, pretty effective right there, but he lost a lot of the pop in his bat. And I don't know. I don't know how he won a gold glove again. He's not that great of a defenseman anymore. But I don't know. I mean, I guess my thought is that I'm more sold on the concept of a Felipe Lopez on the rise rather than an Orlando Hudson on the decline. Now, the question will be, when they're affordable, if Hudson's asking nine, there's no way we're paying nine. I would wonder if the team would even pay five. I mean, my guess it would have to be three or four, but then with a bunch of incentives tossed in there in the end. But even then, I'm a bit apprehensive about it. Just, I don't know. I mean, I always wonder a bit about how Jim Tracy manages his guys, whether he's managing based on ability, skill, performance, or contract.
In terms of these two second base possibilities, again, I'm in complete agreement that obviously, like I said before, Hudson's not getting $9 million. He's not getting $9 million from anybody. In terms of when he becomes affordable, I can't say anymore. I've kind of lost my confidence in my ability to gauge the payroll properly, because every time, like I remember a couple weeks back, I kept saying, there's no way Hudson will be signed. He's out of the discussion, and now he's right back in the discussion. I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, that shows what I know. Of course, I also thought at the time that every single player on the Major League roster was obligated to a Major League contract, which apparently is not the case.
Every player on the Major League roster is obligated to a Major League contract.
But those who are optioned on optional assignment don't have to be paid their Major League salary.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought you meant everyone in the majors. I was saying, no, as long as you're on a Major League roster, you're getting paid at least the league minimum.
Right, but yeah, I'm talking about like the players on the 40-man, like Gomez, Nelson, all those people.
Yeah, they usually sign, like I think we talked about this in discussion threads, they usually get signed on a two-way contract, so that way they get paid, you know, $40,000 while they're in the minors and then $400,000 while they're in the majors.
Right, I'd always just been under the assumption from what I read that, you know, the Major League salary, and of course, even with the split contract, players like, say, Shane Lindsay show up on the payroll as $400,000, even though they may not be earning that money because they're in the minors. So I'd always just assumed that $400,000 was given to them regardless, just for being on the 40-man roster. But now that that's not the case, that obviously opens up some more room that I didn't know was there. So, you know, I guess I can't say I'd be upset with giving Hudson or Lopez a chance. I think for $2 to $3 million, that seems somewhat reasonable. Though,
well, but here's the real question, though. I mean, with Hudson, it's going to be more than likely a 1-year contract.
Right.
I can imagine.
I was about to bring that up. With Lopez, will he sign a 1-year contract?
I guess that's a. I mean, I think he might, to kind of say, hey, look, last year is not a complete aberration. I'm just good now. But are we willing to commit 2 or 3 years to him? I personally, well, I don't know. See, I'm not as high on Eric Young as everyone else seems to be, and maybe that's a point of contention. I just don't see that much greatness in him. I think he's a great story, fan favorite, and if he makes the majors as a bench player, good for him. I'll be honestly happy with it. But he's also the kind of guy who's, you know, blown past all analysts' expectations. So if we sign Felipe Lopez to a 2 or 3 year contract, that's basically saying either, hey, Barmas, we want you as a utility guy, or, hey, Eric Young, there's no room for you. I think it's sending a message to one of those two guys there. I mean, maybe at least for 2010. 2011, when Giambi, assuming Giambi's not with the club anymore, which I'm going to go ahead and assume he won't be, then there might be a different story. But for right now, I mean, they're going to want to try to get the most versatility out of their backups as possible, so we're not having to juggle around starters too badly. And putting Felipe Lopez a full-time second baseman and having Barmes to back up second, third, and short, that's not a bad idea.
Sure. I actually fall on the same side of the issue with Eric Young as you do. For me, it just seems like there's so much obvious concern with Barmas' performance that people are quick to look for any other opportunity. And, of course, Eric Young presents kind of the most toolish, not in a bad way, in a good way.
Toolsy is the word you're looking for.
There you go. Toolsy answer in terms of, you know, obvious speed. Defensive issues, but that speed just attracts so many people, and I think people are quick to assume that he'll be able to make that jump. I don't think we've seen enough of him at the major league level to say anywhere near that he'll be able to make that the jump to being a full-time starter. He's never really been projected to be a full-time starter, so I think it's being a little quick to assume that sort of transition could be made at Barmas' expense.
And I'm not so much trying to say let's throw the kid away. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I just said, I want him to do well. I mean, especially a guy with a name like Eric Young Jr., you got to have him do well and root for him to be, you know, do well with the Rockies. It's just the love of his speed is great, but you look at his splits away, home and away last year in AAA. He was significantly a poorer player on the road than he was in the hitter's haven of Colorado Springs. But at the same time, that's not really a fair statement to make either. I mean, I guess it kind of is, but everyone hits better at home. It's just kind of a fact of baseball. But if you look at Dexter Fowler's 2008 late season call up, he looked lost. He looked like a giraffe learning to walk for the first time. Some of those moments there. And so did Eric Young. I mean, got his first two hits. He got caught, picked off at first twice. Both, I think that was in Jason Stark's, Oddities of Baseball article. But yeah, first two times on base, got picked off first, and I don't think that's ever happened before. And there's no reason to think he won't get better. I think we're realizing that we have a window of opportunity right now, and we really don't have the time to say, all right, kid, let's let you bust your chops and. What's the worst that can happen? We win 70 games? Oh, well, we were going to win 70 anyways. Now, we're a team that's going to win, that has a distinct chance of winning 90-plus games, and I don't think we can really afford a roster spot and all these plate appearances to a guy who may or may not know what he's doing. We want to try to pick up a more known quantity to, you know, make us a better team. Not a better team in 2012, but a better team now.
We've got about 2 minutes left to discuss really quickly how the bench of the team is shaping up. Over the next couple weeks before spring training starts, we're going to devote a quick segment to just discussing different elements of the way the team is looking. And then, of course, we'll go back and review as spring training unfolds whether or not anything's changed. But right now, on January 30th, 2010, the bench looks like blank. So I take it, obviously, Smith and Spielborgs are our two outfielders, and then we have Giambi now for first base. Olivo, barring some sort of weird Loduca explosion, is our backup. In fact, I'd say he's our backup anyway.
We have too much money committed to him.
Exactly.
Which, again, is a frustration of do you play the contract or do you play the player? And we obviously got to play the player, but we'll kind of have to see what happens.
So we still have that fifth spot. And, of course, right now, just with the people in our organization, it's probably Eric Young Jr. But there's still talk of Mora. And, of course, we have Cabrera if he suddenly comes out of nowhere. If Hudson or Felipe Lopez joins the team, Barmas takes that spot. So unless there's anybody I'm forgetting, I really think that's the way that is looking right now.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. I mean, you got, you know, the outfielders, you got Big Thumpin' Jason Giambi, and then either Eric Young and Barmas as the second base guys, or Melvin Mora and no Eric Young, or I don't know. We'll find out here. I'm excited to see. I mean, how sad is it that we're this excited over trying to figure out who our bench infielder is?
Well, we're just that devoted, aren't we? And I mean, we'll get on to more important discussions about the rotation, about the bullpen, and that sort of thing in the coming weeks. But I think for now, this is that's where the bench stands. And then of all the people on the minor league contracts, I don't think, barring an injury, any of them are really that likely to crack the roster this time.
Probably not. I really don't see anyone making a giant impact, barring injury, like you said.
What's the exact date of pitchers and catchers report?
Oh, boy.
It's like the 15th or 16th, somewhere in there.
That sounds about right. We're checking online real quick here. Springtrainingonline.com. Let's take a look at the Cactus League schedule for all of you following at home. Let's see. That doesn't tell me pitchers and catchers report. Curse you. Well, we know the Rockies' first game will be on March 4th at Arizona, but that doesn't really help us as to when pitchers and catchers are going to report, does it?
I kind of enjoyed the World Baseball Classic, as much as it messes up people's routines, I really kind of enjoyed the super long spring training. It was a bit more more exciting. But again, that's a debate for another podcast. We're at 28 minutes, which is much longer than I expected this to go for the first time. So I think we better
wrap it up. Yeah, these things always run real long.
So I think we better wrap it up. I want to thank you all for joining us for this first edition of Robot Radio. I'm Greg Stanwood. I'm here with Andrew Martin, and we're signing off.
Yep, we'll see y'all later.
Bye.